Chapter 8. The Figurehead. We must stop here tomorrow. Egwene shifted carefully on her folding chair. It had a tendency to fold on its own sometimes. Lord Bryn says the army is running short of food. Our camp is certainly short of everything. Two stubby tallow candles burned on the wooden table in front of her. That folded, too, for easy packing, but it was sturdier than the chair. The candles in the tent that served as her study were supplemented by an oil lantern hanging from the center pole up near the peak. The dim yellow light flickered, making faint shadows dance on patched canvas walls that were a far cry from the grandeur of the Ammerlin's study in the White Tower, but that did not upset her. Truth be known, she herself was some considerable distance short of the grandeur normally associated with the Ammerlin seat. She knew very well that the seven-striped stole on her shoulders was the only reason any stranger would believe her Ammerlin, if they did not think it an extremely foolish joke. Odd things had happened in the White Tower's history. Swan had told her secret details of some of them, yet surely nothing so odd as her. 4 or 5 days would be better, Shiriam mused, studying the sheaf of papers in her lap. Slightly plump, with high cheekbones and tilted green eyes, in her dark green riding dress she managed to look elegant and commanding, despite her perch on one of the two precarious stools in front of the table. Exchange her narrow blue stole of the Keeper of the Chronicles for the Ammerlin's, and anyone would think she wore it by right. Sometimes she certainly seemed to believe the striped stole rested on her own shoulders. Or perhaps longer. It would not hurt to build our stores up once more. Swan, atop the other rickety stool, shook her head slightly, but Egwene did not need the hint. One day. She might be just 18 and well short of a true Ammerlin's grandeur, but she was no fool. Too many of the sisters seized on any excuse for a halt. Too many of the sitters as well. And if they stopped too long, it might be impossible to start them moving again. Shiriam opened her mouth. "One, daughter," Egwene said firmly. Whatever Shiriam thought, the fact was that Shiriam Bayanar was the keeper and Egwene Alvir the Ammerlin. If only Shiriam could be brought to realize that. And the Hall of the Tower, they were worse. She wanted to snarl or snap or maybe throw something— but after close to a month and a half, she already had a lifetime's practice in keeping her face and voice smooth at far greater provocation than this. "Any longer and we'll begin to strip the countryside bare. I won't leave people to starve. On the practical side, if we take too much from them, even paid for, they'll give us 100 problems in return. Raids on the herds and flocks, and thieves at the store wagons," Swan murmured. Studying her divided gray skirts, not looking at anyone, she seemed to be thinking aloud. "Men shooting at our guards at night, maybe setting fire to whatever they can reach. A bad business. Hungry people become desperate in a hurry." Those were the same reasons Lord Bryn had given Egwene in very nearly the same words. The fiery-haired woman shot Swan a hard look. Many sisters had a difficult time with Swan. Her face was probably the best known in the camp, young enough to have looked proper above an accepted's dress, or a novice's for that matter. That was a side effect of being stilled, though not many had known it. Swan could hardly walk a step without sisters staring at her, the once Ammerlin seat, deposed and cut off from Sidar, then healed and restored to at least some ability, when everyone knew that was impossible. Many welcomed her back warmly as a sister once more, for herself and for the miracle that held out hope against what every Aes Sedai feared beyond death. But just as many or more offered lukewarm toleration or condescension or both, blaming her for their present situation. Shiriam was one of those who thought Swan should instruct the new young Ammerlin in protocol and the like, which everyone believed she hated, and keep her mouth closed unless she was called upon. She was less than she had been, no longer Ammerlin, and no longer anywhere near so strong in the power. It was not cruelty as Aes Sedai saw it. The past was past. What was now was, and must be accepted. Anything else only brought greater pain. By and large, Aes Sedai admitted change slowly, but once they did, For most, it was as if things had always been that way. One day, mother, as you say, Shiryam sighed at last, bowing her head slightly. Less in submission, Egwene was sure, than to hide a grimace over her stubbornness. She would accept the grimace if the acquiescence came with it. For the time being, she had to. Swan bowed her head, too, to hide a smile. Any sister might be appointed to any post, but the social pecking order was quite rigid, and Swan stood a long way further down than she had. That was one reason. The papers on Shiryam's lap were duplicated on Swan's, and on the table in front of Egwene. Reports on everything from the number of candles and sacks of beans remaining in the camp to the state of the horses, and the same for Lord Bryn's army. The army's camp encircled the Aes Sedai's, with a ring perhaps 20 steps wide between, but in many ways they might as well have been a mile apart. Surprisingly, Lord Bryn insisted on that as much as the sisters. The Aes Sedai did not want soldiers wandering among their tents, a lot of unwashed, illiterate ruffians with light fingers often as not, and it seemed the soldiers did not want Aes Sedai wandering among them either, though, perhaps wisely, they held their reasons close. They marched toward Tar Valon to pull down a usurper to the Ammerlin seat and raise Egwene in her place, yet few men were truly comfortable around Aes Sedai, few enough women either. As keeper, Shiryam would have been all too happy to take these minor matters out of Egwene's hands. She had said as much, explaining how minor they were, how the Ammerlin seat should not be burdened with day-to-day trifles. Swan, on the other hand, said a good Ammerlin paid attention to just those, not trying to duplicate the work of dozens of sisters and clerks, yet checking on something different every day. That way she had a good idea of what was happening and what needed doing before someone came running to her with a crisis already breaking into shards. A feel for how the wind was blowing, Swan called it. Making sure these reports reached her had required weeks, and Egwene was sure that once she let them pass to Shiryam's control, she would never again learn anything until it was long dealt with, if then. A silence stretched as they began reading the next paper in each stack. They were not alone. Chesa, seated on cushions to one side of the tent, spoke. "Too little light is bad for the eyes," she murmured almost to herself, holding up one of Egwene's silk stockings that she was darning. "You'll never catch me ruining my eyes over words in this little light." Just short of stout, with a twinkle in her eyes and a merry smile, Egwene's maid was always trying to slip advice to the Ammerlin, as though talking about herself. She could have been in Egwene's service 20 years, instead of less than 2 months, and 3 times as old as Egwene, instead of barely twice. Tonight, Egwene suspected that she talked to fill silences. There was a tension in the camp since Loghain had escaped. A man who could channel, shielded and under close guard, yet he had slipped away like fog. Everyone walked on edge, wondering how, wondering where he was, what he intended to do now. Egwene wished harder than most that she could be sure she knew where Loghain Ablar was. Giving her papers a firm snap of her wrists, Shiryam frowned at Chesa. She did not understand why Egwene let her maid be present at these meetings, much less let her chatter away freely. It probably never occurred to her that Chesa's presence and her unexpected chatter frequently unsettled her just enough to help Egwene sidestep advice she did not want to take, and postpone decisions she did not want to make, at least not the way Shiryam wanted them made. Certainly the notion had never occurred to Chesa. She smiled apologetically and returned to her darning, occasionally murmuring to herself. "If we continue, mother," Shiryam said coolly, "we may finish before dawn." Staring at the next page, Egwene rubbed her temples. Chesa might be right about the light. She had another headache coming on. Then again it might be the page, detailing what money was left. The stories she had read never mentioned how much coin was required to keep an army. Pinned to the sheet were notes from 2 of the sitters, Romanda and Lilaine, suggesting the soldiers be paid less frequently. Paid less, in fact. More than suggesting, really, just as Romanda and Lilaine were more than simply 2 sitters in the hall. Other sitters followed where they led, if not all by any means, while the only sitter Egwene could count on was Delana, and her not far. It was rare that Lelaine and Romanda agreed on anything, and they could hardly have chosen a worse. Some of the soldiers had sworn oaths, yet most were there for their pay, and maybe the hope of loot. "The soldiers are to be paid as before," Egwene muttered, crumpling the two notes. She was not going to let her army melt away, any more than she would allow looting. "As you command, mother." Shiriam's eyes sparkled with pleasure. The difficulties must be clear to her. Anyone who thought her less than very intelligent was in deep trouble, but she did have a blind spot. If Romanda or Lelaine said the sun was coming up, Shiriam most likely would claim it was going down. She had had almost as much sway with the hall as they did now, perhaps more, until they put a halt to it between them. The opposite was true as well. Those two would speak against anything Shiriam wanted before they stopped to think, which had its uses, all in all. Egwene's fingers tapped on the tabletop, but she made them stop. The money had to be found, somewhere, somehow, but she did not have to let Shiriam see her worry. "That new woman will work out," Chesa murmured over her sewing. "Tyrants always carry their noses high, of course, but Selene does know what's required of a lady's maid. Mary and I will settle her down soon enough." Shiriam rolled her eyes irritably. Egwene smiled to herself. Egwene Alvear with three maids waiting on her, as unbelievable as the stole itself. But the smile lasted only a heartbeat. Maids had to be paid, too. A tiny sum, balanced against 30,000 soldiers, and the Ammerlin could hardly do her own laundry or mend her own shifts. But she could have managed splendidly with Chesa alone, and would have, had she any choice in it. Less than a week earlier, Romanda had decided that the Ammerlin needed another servant and found Mary among the refugees who huddled in every village until they were chased away. And, not to be outdone, Lelaine produced Selene from the same source. The two women were crowded into Chase's small tent before Egwene knew either existed. The principle of the thing was wrong. Three maids when there was not enough silver to pay the army halfway to Tarvalen. Servants chosen for her without any say. And then there was the fact that she had yet another, if one who received not a copper. Everyone believed Marigan was the Ammerlin's maid-servant anyway. Beneath the edge of the table she felt her belt pouch, felt the bracelet inside. She should wear it more. It was a duty. Keeping her hands low, she dug the bracelet out and slipped it around her wrist. A band of silver made so the catch was invisible once closed. Made with the one power, the bracelet snapped shut beneath the table, and she very nearly snatched it off again. Emotion flooded into a corner of her mind. Emotion and awareness. A little pocket, as if she were imagining it. Not imagination, though, all too real. Half of an eidom, the bracelet created a link between her and the woman who wore the other half, a silver necklace the wearer could not remove herself. They were a circle of two without embracing Sidar, Egwene always leading by virtue of the bracelet. Marigan was asleep now, her feet sore from walking all day and days past, but even sleeping, fear oozed through most strongly. Only hate ever came near fear in the stream that flowed through the eidom. Egwene's reluctance came from the constant gnawing of the other woman's terror, from having worn the necklace end of the eidom once, and from knowing the woman on the far end. She hated sharing any part of her. Only three women in the camp knew that Mogedion was a prisoner, hidden in the midst of Aes Sedai. If it came out, Mogedion would be tried, stilled, and executed in short order. If it came out, Egwene might not be far behind her, and Swan and Lyanna as well. They were the other two who knew. At best, she would have the stole stripped away. For hiding one of the Forsaken from justice, she thought grimly, I'll be lucky if they just stick me back with the accepted. Unconsciously, she thumbed the golden great serpent ring on the first finger of her right hand. Then again, however just such a punishment might be, it was unlikely. She'd been taught that the wisest of the sisters was chosen Ammerlin's seat, yet she had learned better. The choosing of an Ammerlin was as hotly contested as electing a mayor in the Two Rivers, and maybe more. No one bothered to stand against her father in Emmons Field, but she had heard about elections in Devon Ride and Tarran Ferry. Swan had only been raised Ammerlin because the three before her each had died after just a few years on the Ammerlin seat. The Hall had wanted someone young. Speaking of age to a sister was at least as rude as slapping her face, yet she had begun to get some idea how long Aes Sedai lived. Rarely was anyone chosen sitter before she had worn the shawl 70 or 80 years at least, and Ammerlin's generally longer, often much longer. So when the Hall deadlocked between four sisters raised Aes Sedai less than 50 years before, and Cian Harriman of the White suggested a woman who had worn the shawl only 10 years, it might have been as much exhaustion as Swan's qualifications in administration that brought the sitters to stand for her. And Egwene Alvere, who in many eyes should still have been a novice? A figurehead, easily directed, a child who had grown up in the same village with Randall Thor. That last definitely had its part in the decision. They would not take back the stole, but she would find the little authority she had managed to accumulate gone. Romanda, Lelaine, and Shiria might actually come to blows over which would march her about by the scruff of her neck. "That looks much like a bracelet I saw Elaine wearing." The papers on Shiriam's lap crackled as she leaned forward for a better look. "And Nynaeve. They shared it, as I recall." Egwene gave a start. She had been careless. "It's the same. A remembrance gift when they left." Twisting the silver circlet around her wrist, she felt a stab of guilt that was all her own. The bracelet appeared segmented, but so cunningly you could not see how exactly. She had hardly thought of Nynaeve and Elaine since their departure for Ebu Dar. Perhaps she should call them back. Their search was not going well, it seemed, though they denied it. Still, if they could find what they were after. Shiriam was frowning. Whether or not at the bracelet, Egwene could not say. She could not allow Shiriam to start thinking too much on that bracelet, though. If she ever noticed that the necklace Maragon wore was a match, there might be painfully awkward questions. Rising, Egwene smoothed her skirt as she moved around the table. Swan had acquired several pieces of information today. One could be put to good use now. She was not the only one with secrets. Shiriam looked surprised when she stopped too close for the other woman to stand. "Daughter, I've learned that a few days after Swan and Lyanna arrived in Salidar, 10 sisters left, 2 from each Aja there except the Blue. Where did they go, and why?" Shiriam's eyes narrowed a fraction, but she wore serenity as comfortably as her dress. "Mother, I can hardly recall every—" "No dancing around, Shiriam." Egwene moved a little closer, until their knees almost touched. "No lies by omission. The truth." A frown creased Shiriam's smooth forehead. "Mother, even if I knew, you cannot trouble yourself with every little—" "The truth, Shiriam. The whole truth. Must I ask before the entire Hall why I cannot have the truth from my keeper? I will have it, daughter, one way or another. I will have it." Shiriam's head swiveled as though she was looking for a way to escape. Her eyes fell on Chesa, hunched over her sewing, and she all but gasped with relief. "Mother, tomorrow, when we are alone, I am sure I can explain everything to your satisfaction. I must speak with a few of the sisters first, so they could work up what Shiriam was to tell her tomorrow." "Chesa," Egwene said, "wait outside, please." For all that she seemed focused on her work to the exclusion of everything else, Chesa bounded to her feet in a flash and very nearly ran from the tent. When Aes Sedai were at odds, anyone with half a brain went elsewhere. "Now, daughter," Egwene said, "the truth, all that you know. This is as private as you will be," she added when Shiriam glanced at Swan. For a moment Shiriam adjusted her skirts, plucking at them really, avoiding Egwene's eyes, no doubt still working out evasions. But the three oaths trapped her. She could not speak an untrue word, and whatever she thought of Egwene's true position, slipping behind her back was a long way from denying her authority to her face. Even Romanda maintained the proper courtesies, if only by a hair at times. Drawing a deep breath, Shiriam folded her hands in her lap and spoke to Egwene's chest, matter of fact. When we learned the Red Aja was responsible for setting Loghain up as a false dragon, we felt something had to be done. We certainly meant the small coterie of sisters she had gathered around her. Carlinia and Beonin and the rest held as much real sway as most sitters, if not actually in the hall. Elida was sending out demands for every sister to return to the tower, so we chose 10 sisters to do just that, by the fastest means they could manage. They all should be there long since, quietly making sure that every sister in the tower understands the truth of what the Reds did with Loghain. She hesitated, then finished in a rush. Not even the hall knows of them. Egwene stepped away, rubbing her temples again, quietly making sure, in the hope that Elida would be deposed. Not exactly a bad scheme, really. It might even work eventually. It might take years, too. But then for most sisters, the longer they could go without truly doing anything, the better. With enough time, they could convince the world that the White Tower had never really broken. It had been broken before, even if only a handful knew it. Maybe with enough time, they could find a way to adjust everything so it had not, really. Why keep it from the hall, Shiriam? Surely you don't think any of them would betray your plan to Elida? Half the sisters eyed the other half askance for fear of Elida's sympathizers, partly for fear of that. Mother, a sister who decided that what we do is a mistake would hardly let herself be chosen a sitter. Any such would have taken herself away long since. Shiriam had not relaxed, but her voice took on the patient, instructing tone she seemed to think had the greatest effect on Egwene. Usually, though, she was more adroit at changing the subject. These suspicions are the worst problem we face for the time being. No one really trusts anyone. If we could only see how to... The Black Aja, Swan cut in quietly. That's what chills your blood like a silver pike up your skirts. Who can say for sure who is black, and who can say what a black sister might do? Shiriam darted another hard look at Swan, but after a moment the force went out of her, or rather one sort of tension replaced another. She glanced at Egwene, then nodded reluctantly. By the sour twist to her mouth, she would have made another evasion had it not been plain Egwene would not stand for it. Most sisters in the camp believed now, but after more than 3,000 years denying the Black Aja's existence, it was a queasy belief. Almost no one would open her mouth on that topic, no matter what they believed. "The question, Mother," Swan went on, "is what happens when the hall does find out." She seemed to be thinking aloud again. "I can't see any sitter accepting the excuse that she couldn't be told because she might be on Elida's side. And as for the possibility she might be Black Aja, yes, I think they will be quite upset." Shiriam's face paled slightly. It was a wonder she did not go dead white. Upset did not begin to cover it. Yes, Shiriam would face much more than upset if this came out. Now was the time to drive home her advantage, but another question occurred to Egwene. If Shiriam and her friends had sent... What were they? Not spies. Ferrets, maybe, sent into the walls after rats. If Shiriam had sent ferrets into the White Tower, could... A sudden stab of pain through that pocket of sensations in the back of her head sent everything else flying. Had she felt it directly, it would have been numbing. As it was, her eyes bulged in shock. A man who could channel was touching the necklace around Mogedion's neck. This was one link no man could be brought into. Pain, and something unheard of from Mogedion. Hope. And then it was all gone. The awareness. The emotions. The necklace was off. "I need some fresh air," she managed. Shiriam started to rise and Swan, but she waved them back down. "No, I want to be alone," she said hastily. "Swan, find out everything Shiriam knows about the ferrets. Light, I meant the 10 sisters." They both stared at her, but thanked the light neither followed as she snatched the lantern from its hook and hurried out. It would not do for the Ammerlin to be seen running, yet she came close, hoisting her divided skirts as well as she could with her free hand, and very nearly trotting. A cloudless sky made the moonlight bright, dappling the tents and wagons with shadows. Most people in the camp were asleep, but low fires still burned here and there. A handful of warders were about, a few servants, too many eyes to see if she ran. The last thing she wanted was someone offering help. She realized she was panting, but from alarm, not exertion. Thrusting her head and the lantern into Marigan's tiny tent, she found it empty. The blankets that made up the pallet on the ground lay in a sprawl, tossed aside by someone in a hurry. And what if she had still been here, she wondered, with the necklace off, and maybe whoever freed her? Shivering, she withdrew slowly. Mogedion had good reason to dislike her, very personally, and the only sister who could match one of the Forsaken alone when she could channel at all was in Ebudar. Mogedion could have killed Egwene without anyone noticing. Even had a sister felt her channel, there would be nothing remarkable in that. Worse, Mogedion might not have killed her, and no one would have known anything until they found the pair of them gone. "Mother," Chesa fussed behind her, "you should not be out in the night air. Night air is bad air. If you wanted Marigan, I could have fetched her." Egwene very nearly jumped. She had not been aware of Chesa following her. She studied the people at the nearest fires. They had gathered for companionship, not warmth, in this unholy heat, and they were not close, but maybe someone had seen who went into Marigan's tent. She certainly had few visitors, and no men among them. A man might well have been remarked. "I think she has run away, Chesa." "Why, that wicked woman!" Chesa exclaimed. "I always said she had a mean air and a sneaking eye. Slinking away like a thief after you took her in. She'd be starving by a road if not for you. No gratitude at all." She followed all the way back to the tent where Egwene slept, nattering on about wickedness in general, the thanklessness of Marigan in particular, and how that sort should be handled, which seemed to jump between switching them till they settled down and tossing them out before they could run away. Tucked around cautions that Egwene check her jewelry to be sure it was all still there. Egwene barely heard. Her mind spun. It could not have been low gain, could it? He could not have known about Mogedion, much less come back to rescue her. Could he? Those men Rand was gathering, those Ashaman. Rumor in every village carried whispers of Ashaman and the Black Tower. Most of the sisters tried to pretend they were unaffected by dozens of men who could channel gathering in one spot. The worst of the tales had to be inflated, rumor always exaggerated. But Egwene's toes wanted to curl under with fright whenever she thought of them. An Ashaman could have. But why? How would he have known any more than Loghain? She was trying to avoid the only reasonable conclusion. Something far worse than Loghain had come back, or even Ashaman. One of the Forsaken had freed Mogedion. Ravine was dead by Rand's hand, according to Nynaeve, and he had killed Ishamael as well, or so it seemed. And Aginor and Balthamel. Moiraine had killed Baelal. That left only Asmodian, Demondred, and Samael among the men. Samael was in Ilion. No one knew where the others were, or any of the women who survived. Moiraine had done for Lanfear, too, or they had done for each other. But all the other women were still alive, so far as anyone knew. Forget the women. It had been a man. Which? Plans had been laid long since in case one of the Forsaken struck at the camp. No one sister here could equal any of the Forsaken by herself, but linked in circles was another matter, and any Forsaken who stepped into their camp would find circles forming on every side of him, or her, once they realized who she was. The Forsaken showed no signs of agelessness, for some reason. Maybe it was some effect of being connected to the Dark One. This was dithering. She had to start thinking clearly. Chesa? Look like you need your head rubbed for the ache again, is what you... Yes, mother? Find Swan and Lyanna. Tell them to come to me, but don't let anyone hear you. Grinning, Chesa dropped a curtsy and scampered out. She could hardly avoid knowing the currents that swirled around Egwene, yet she found all the plotting and scheming fun. Not that she knew more than surface, and little enough of that. Egwene did not doubt her loyalty, but Chase's opinion of what was exciting might change if she learned the depth of those swirls. Channeling the oil lamps inside the tent alight, Egwene blew out the lantern and set it carefully in a corner. Maybe she had to think clearly, but she still felt as if she was stumbling in the dark.